Good morning, Milestone. Thanks for joining me online. I'm standing here in pretty much an empty auditorium and looking around at the pews and seeing faces that should be there that are not there. It's certainly a little bit different this morning, as it's different for you as well. I hope that you're able to just join in and be not distracted for the next 30 or 40 minutes as I talk through the things that God has laid on my heart. We're going to be meeting like this for the next couple of weeks. From the different announcements that we're seeing come out, I don't think we'll be able to meet as a church in this facility for a couple of weeks. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to have our Easter service gathering together, and we'll see how things roll out. But we'll keep you informed as the days and weeks go forward here. And in the meantime, I've been doing each night a Milestone Minute at 8 o'clock in the evening that you can be able to check out. And just pretty much what I call my minute, which is generally a little bit more than that, where I'm sharing just some thoughts from God's Word as to what's been going on with me and what I have just as an encouragement for you as well. And so feel free to check that out. That's on our church ministry page and our Facebook ministry page, and if you're not connected to that, just request that, and we'll be able to get you connected into that. As we look at our studies, we're going to continue our study in the Gospel of John, and so we're going to do that each week. That's where we've been, and we're just going to continue to work through the Gospel of John, and today we're in chapter 6. So if you want to open your Bibles there, we're going to dive into John chapter 6. Well, the beginning of this series several weeks ago, and this is part 7 of the series, the beginning of this, Andrew and I, we always work on the different details as to what the series is called and different things. And so Andrew and I were talking about this, and the series title I came up with was Greater Than, which is really a math sign that we have as a symbol of that. And it's really kind of like the math where 10 is greater than 6 and so on and so forth. And the correlation is that Jesus is greater than you fill in the blank. And in this series, I'm saying Jesus is greater than really everything. So then Andrew, a couple days later, he said, "Hey, listen, give me a tagline or description line for this series that you're doing." And so I was working on it and just going back and forth and wordsmithing it out a little bit. And I came up with this, and it's on our website, struggling question mark. This series reminds us that Jesus is greater than every struggle we face. Now, I would have never in my wildest thoughts imagined the struggles that we'd be faced with today. Who would have thought that we'd essentially be quarantined and kind of sheltering in place in our homes, that we couldn't meet as a church, not for 1 week, but for several weeks. At first, it felt like a snowstorm was about to happen, but snow didn't come. We had 80-degree weather instead. And so we're like, something's going to happen, and it just keeps getting more and more difficult as we have to kind of isolate more and more from people. It's a struggle. It is just a struggle, and some are filled with a lot of anxiety and frustration and fear, and rightfully so. And so, can I really say that Jesus is greater than every struggle? Can I really say that Jesus is greater than coronavirus? Can I really say that Jesus is greater than any illness or sickness? Can I really say that Jesus is greater than a stock market crash that's happening on a daily or weekly basis, it seems? Can I really say that Jesus is greater than unemployment? Can I say that he's greater than fear of getting sick? Can I say that he's greater than fear of losing someone or losing your job or losing everything? Well, let's look at John chapter 6, because I think this really helps us to gain some insight as to how great Jesus is. So John chapter 6, verse 1 is where we're going to dive in. And in this text, you'll see, if you study this out, you can see this in others of the Gospels where they record different details. So I'll integrate those details into what I'm sharing. And the context behind this is it's at a time where specifically where John the Baptist was beheaded. John the Baptist was put into prison, and during that some circumstances happened and he was beheaded. And this is John the Baptist, one who's a relative of Jesus and a friend of Jesus, and one who is very respected in the community as someone who loved God and was following God. And he was very zealous about sharing the hope that Messiah brings with the people around him. And so he was a popular figure, you would say, someone that people would know. And so this is the backdrop of this. In our day, what would happen in America if a famous preacher was killed? You know, if you go back 50 years and you look at, you know, some of the things that happened there, what would happen if a famous preacher is killed today in just an unexplainable kind of a situation? Really, I would say that the whole world would begin to question what's going on. There'd be fear, there'd be anxiety, there'd be struggle that would happen as a result of this. And that, I believe, is the context that we're looking at in John chapter 6. And so let's read this through and see where this is going. It says, after this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up to the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. Lifting up his eyes then, and seeing what large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus says something to Philip. Now pause there, and let me give you some context. In the other accounts in Matthew and Mark, they relate into this and say that this is a time where he's actually been teaching this large crowd, and John is kind of giving you the end result of the teaching of this throughout the day. And so this very large crowd that we'll find out later on is 5,000 people plus is sitting there, and Jesus has been teaching. And I would say that they needed hope, and they're hanging out with Jesus needing hope and wanting to have some kind of context of what's going on with John the Baptist and life in general. And they're seeing all the signs that Jesus is doing, and so now they're looking at these signs and saying, okay, there's something about this person. We need to investigate more. He's giving us hope, and we need some of that for sure. So here he says to Philip, he leans over as the crowd's there, and Mark and Matthew put this at the tail end of the day when it was about dinner time, really, and he puts it down at that point in time where he's beginning to have compassion on the crowd that's been there with them, and they're hungry. And he leans over to Philip, and I kind of look at this, and he kind of leans over and says this thing just to Philip. And the other guys can hear a bit. He says, where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat? Hey, we need to do something about the people that are hungry. Where are we going to go buy bread? Hey, listen, Walmart's closed down. It's too far away anyway. ShopRite, I don't know about that. Acme and all these others, we'd like to go there. Hey, where would you go to buy some bread for feeding all these people? Now, pause for a second. How many loaves of bread do you need to feed 5,000 people? I grew up in a family of 9 kids and the parents, and when we sat down at dinner time, we sat down and we kind of had our elbows out protecting our plates. I didn't realize that until we had a guest come in and say, you know, you guys sit there protecting your plates. Here's why, because mom made enough food for all of us, but it was 8 boys she was feeding. And if you know anything about 8 boys, you know, and or even one boy, we can eat a lot of food. And could you imagine? I mean, that's just 11 people in our home. Could you imagine 5,000 people? And so he's leaning over to Philip and saying, hey, listen, where are we going to buy food for them? I couldn't imagine being in Philip's shoes. And he says this in verse 6. He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. He knows what's happening. Jesus always knows what's next. Right? The next thing does not surprise him. So he's just testing. He's seeing what's on Philip's mind. And here's what Philip does. I love this. Philip answers in verse 7. He answers, 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough for each of them to get a little. So it's as if he goes and he pulls out of his pocket, he grabs his wallet and he opens it up and he pulls out 200 denarii. Or he goes over to Judas, who's got the treasury, and says, hey, how much is in the treasury there? And he's got 200 denarii. He pulls it out and he says, listen, this is all we got. Like, this is all my wallet is going to allow for us to get accomplished here. And I don't think that's going to really feed many people. And he says, here's what it's going to do. It's just going to be some morsels. It's kind of like we're going to just go out and get trail mix, and everybody can have one little piece of the trail mix, and that's as far as we're going to go. Could you imagine being Philip in this position? He's just thinking about it rationally, thinking about the reality of it. He's not being crazy. He's saying, in reality, 200 denarii will only go so far. In reality, my wallet is only going to take me this far. Now think about this. In light of all that's happened in the last week here, many in our church have lost their employment, and some fear that they're going to lose theirs. And many of us have already done the same thing as Philip. And I'm not judging you for it, and I'm not saying you're wrong for it, but we've opened up our wallets, and we've looked in, and we've said, how far will my wallet take me? How far will my wallet get me? Will it get me a week, a month, a couple of months? So Jesus dives in here. Verse 8, one of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a boy here who has five barley loaves and two fish. But what are they for so many? It's as if he goes through, they go through the crowd and they find out who's got what kind of food. And I would expect that they were not prepared because of the crisis that was going on. They didn't think about, hey, there's a conference going on. Jesus is the host. And we're going over to see this and bring some food, bring your picnic basket or whatever. They're in crisis mode where John the Baptist was just beheaded. They get to this place and they're just hanging out, not thinking about the food. But this little boy, the only one that's responsible in all the thousands of people is this little boy, or they already ate everything that they had and the little boy just didn't. And so they find this child that has five barley loaves and two fish, and they said, hey, listen, here's what we got. We got a sack lunch for a kindergartner. How far will that take us? It won't take us far. And I love what Jesus does. He turns to them. He says, hey, guys, why don't you have them sit down, get them all organized, and we're going to distribute some food. Something's going to happen here that you've never seen before. And they had no idea what was going on. So out of pure obedience and responsibility, not because they had faith in thinking that Jesus was going to multiply the food, not that they thought that Chick-fil-A was going to drop in food, or they weren't thinking anything. They were just thinking, Jesus says this, so therefore that's all I'm going to do. And so they do. They set them down. They get them organized. And in verse 10, after they do that, now there was much grass in the place. So the men sat down, about 5,000 numbers. So it's 5,000 men, and the speculation is, or assumption is, that there's women and children there with them. And so there's probably 10, 15,000, who knows. But we'll say a minimum of 5,000. It says, Jesus then took the loaves. When he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. So Jesus goes and takes the five barley loaves and takes the two fish, and he breaks it apart, takes it and puts it in whatever baskets are on the platters or whatever that they have there to go hand out. And the disciples are going and handing it out to the 50s, the groups of 50 and 100, and they're handing it out to thousands of people till everyone had eaten all that they wanted to eat. Listen, this was an all-you-can-eat smorgasbord. Could you imagine this? It's all you can eat. Listen, you didn't have to stop them and say, oh, no, share with so-and-so. No, just keep eating. Just keep eating. Eat as much as you want. And it says they ate as much as they wanted till everyone was full. And then in verse 12, and when they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, gather up the leftover fragments that nothing may be lost. So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets of fragments with the barley loaves left by those who had eaten. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, this indeed is the prophet who has come into the world. So let's make this real. He took this child's lunch and he fed 5,000 people with it. My point is very simple, is that Jesus is greater than our wallets. As a matter of fact, what he's simply saying is, I didn't even need your wallet. I didn't even need your wallet. Now, the reality of this is we may need to accept something different than what we had planned on. We may need to give up some of our control with what God provides for us because God might have something totally different than what we wanted. God may have some totally different plans in mind for us that we were thinking, no, I want to go this way. And he steps in and says, yes, I understand the menu that you wanted, but I'm going to give you the barley loaves and fish that I'm providing for you because this is what's best for you today. Some of those changes that we work through are going to be challenging. In the midst of everything that's going on, I believe that God's going to provide for us in ways that we are not expecting or planning on having them provided for us. I think God's going to show up in ways that we were not even thinking, where we had in mind this is the way God's going to do things, and I've got the wallet, and this is what God's going to do, and God says, nah, let me toss your wallet out because I've got something better. I've got the child that has his little lunch, and that's going to take care of you. So here's what happens with this. They get all excited and they say, this is the prophet who's come into the world. In verse 15, perceiving that they went, that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. So he goes off and the disciples essentially go with him and they withdraws back to the mountain. And the people kind of, he gets them to scatter and move on. You see, they were looking for someone that was going to care and provide for them. Where the current government was not looking to care and provide for, they were looking to take as much as they can from them. And so there's an easy transition that they're looking for. And so here's what happens in verse 16. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea. They got into the boat and started across the Sea of Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. So here he sends them off. They get into a boat. And he says, listen, I'll catch up with you. And so he goes off and he spends some time praying there on his own up on the mountain. And while he's there, it says that they rowed out in verse 18. It says the sea became rough because of a strong wind was blowing. So the strong wind's blowing against them. They're not able to get across. And it says they're out in the middle about 3 or 4 miles away from the shore. So they're rowing for their lives, trying to get across there. They're stuck in this storm, and they're not sure what to do. And they have enough experience to know that if you just keep pushing, eventually you'll outpace the storm, hopefully, and get to the other side. Well, while they're there, something unbelievable, something like never that had never happened before happens. It says, when they rowed about 3 or 4 miles away, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near the boat. Now, realize that this is during a storm while the waves are crashing all about, while the wind, the sea is not like glass. It's all over the place. And here's Jesus walking on top of the water, getting out to where the disciples are in the boat. And John says he would have passed them, or Mark says he would have passed by them, and John says he drew near to the boat. And what would you do? Listen, let's pause. If you were out in the boat in the middle of the, when it was dark, and you see this kind of figure coming your way, and it's storming, how would you respond to this? You would need depends for sure, right? I mean, this would be a very challenging moment for all of you. You'd scream like, you know, little schoolgirls in the boat, like, oh, what's going on? It's a ghost. And that's what they record. They record that about themselves. They thought, they were frightened. They were terrified. They thought it was ghosts. It was crazy times for them. What's going on here? And Jesus responds and says in verse 26, he says to them, it is I, do not be afraid. It is I, do not be afraid. Listen, they were not thinking about Jesus. They were thinking that they just needed to get through the storm. They weren't thinking, where's Jesus in this? They weren't thinking, hey, let's talk to Jesus, or maybe that's Jesus. He said he was coming at some. They weren't thinking about Jesus at all. They were thinking, I've just got to survive the storm. Boy, does that sound familiar? That so many of us right now are thinking, I just need to survive the storm. And instead, I want to push us back and say, no, hold on a second. Jesus is part of this because Jesus shows up in the storm. Notice, he does not prevent the storm, but he shows up in the storm. Too many people have this idea that if God's in your life, no storms will happen. You won't have financial trouble. You won't have stress. You won't have relational difficulty. You won't get sick, and they won't get sick, and you won't have any of that. That's not true. What the reality is that when Jesus is in your life, it's that he is there in the storm. He doesn't prevent the storm. So he calms them down, and according to Matthew, and if you want to look at this with me, in Matthew chapter 14, at this time, after he says this, take heart, it's I, do not be afraid. In verse 28, Peter answers to him. It's almost like just secondhand nature. Peter's like, Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water. Not even thinking about this. Listen, when's the last time you even imagined walking on water? And here's Peter. Okay, Lord, if it's you, I mean, really you? Just call me out. I'll come on the water with you. And so he says, come. So Peter gets out of the boat and walks on the water and came to Jesus. Could you imagine that moment? He turns around to John. He turns to Philip and Nathaniel. He's like, hey, look at me. What do you got? You know? And he's walking on water over to where Jesus is because he realizes it's safer to be on the water in the storm with Jesus than it is to stay in the boat with the rest of everyone. And so he gets out and he walks over to where Jesus is. But then in that little moment when he gets there, he sees the wind, verse 30, when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. And Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Why did you doubt? Didn't you see what I've already done? You were already walking on water. It didn't matter how big the wave was. I'm greater than the wave. And so as he's sinking, he took his hand and he pulled him back up and they go back to the boat. And when he got into the boat, the wind ceased. And the response from the disciples is, those that were in the boat, they worshiped him. They marveled. They were just blown away. Because they didn't really get the whole feeding of the 5,000. But they got this. Here's my point. Jesus is greater than wallets and waves. Jesus is greater than wallets and waves. Jesus is greater than waves. He can walk on the waves and he can calm the waves. And let me just bring this to an application for you this morning. Many are struggling with what I'll call the corona wave. They're struggling with the corona wave. Our fears and anxieties are through the roof, understandably so. Because of all the things that are going on and all the different challenges that we face that are being handed to us or the things that we're just naturally facing as a result. If you're not anxious, you probably haven't watched the news. So here's the hope that I know. And this is what I want to share with you. If Jesus can feed thousands with the lunch of this little boy, then he can figure this out too. And if Jesus can walk on the waves and make the waves go away, he can walk on the corona wave and make the corona wave go away too. So, church, this is our time to shine. Because we look at history, we see the past, we see what Jesus has done, that he can do all these things, and we understand he's the bread of life, he's the resurrection of life, he can walk on waves, he can calm the waves, he's the one that can feed thousands with just a little sack lunch, he can do anything, he is the God of the impossible. So church, we trust in the living God that can do the impossible. He's not limited by our wallets, and he's not limited by a wave. He's greater. So, my question then is, would you be like this boy? Would you be like this boy with the lunch and be like Peter and trust God enough to direct your fears, to stay connected to God because Jesus is greater, and figure out ways to be a blessing to others? You see, that's the reality of where we are. We can look at all that we're faced with, and we can say, well, I don't know, I'm hungry, I'm not sure how far my wallet's going to take me, and we can focus on the wallet, and we can focus on the wave and the storm all around us. We can look at that and just keep our eyes laser focused on the storm and laser focused on the wallet. We can see all those things, but the reality of that is it won't get us anywhere. So something different, something that God's calling us to, is to be looking and saying, okay, rather than that, let me redirect my fears and anxiety and redirect it to be looking at Jesus who can do the impossible and say, okay, God, I give you my lunch. God, I'll step out onto the water if you want me to. And allow God to do what only he can do with what he's already given to you. Have you thought about this? This boy that's giving up his lunch, do you realize he's giving up his lunch? Like, he already had lunch. He's the only one that's prepared. He just stuck his tongue out and said, mm-hmm. But instead, he gave up his lunch. And for some of us, I think God's going to call us to give up something to be able to be a blessing to others and to watch God multiply and use it in tremendous ways. I look at all of this and I say, I think the potential of what God could do in our communities, in our families, in our neighborhoods, if we were willing to trust God like this little boy and trust God like Peter did at first, I think God could do some amazing things. Look, if he bless thousands of people with one little boy's faith, what could he do with our community that's watching online right now? I believe he could do amazing things if we are looking. I think the tendency for all of us is to kind of hibernate into our homes and to be isolated and not connected in any kind of way. That's not what the church is called to do. The church, our church, is called to be a church for the community, a church that's going out and trying to reach people. And I understand the social distancing. I understand the sheltering in place, and we need to follow the guidelines that are there. But there are other ways to minister to people. We can send a card. We can send an encouraging text or a note or give a phone call. We can do different things. We can order someone some food, or we can do all kinds of different things to be a blessing to others, to our next door neighbors that we haven't talked to since last summer, to our friends across the street or friends down the way or people within the church. We can simply look for ways to be a blessing. In order to do that, you've got to be willing to stop looking at the storm and stop looking at your wallet and start looking at Jesus and say, Jesus, what would you like me to do with what you've given to me? For some, he's given you a whole lot of time. Can I encourage you to redeem the time? Now is the time. I believe that through this season, my wife and I were talking about this morning, I believe we could see revival happen in America like never before, where people turn to God and say, God is real, and look, God showed up and took care of us in amazing ways. I believe we could see that. And I believe the only way that we're going to see some amazing things happen is if, church, we get out and we do what God calls us to do during this time. That we look to be a blessing in all the different ways that he gives us the opportunities to be a blessing. So this week, this week. Would you apply this text this week? Don't take your wallet and say, Jesus is greater than my wallet. Take the storm and the waves that you see all around us, the corona wave, and say, Jesus is greater than the corona wave. And then look for ways to be a blessing. Look for ways to share your lunch. Look for ways to step out into the wave and say, okay, God, what would you have me to do to be a blessing? And can I just encourage you? Does God lead you to do some things there? Feel free to share what God does. Share it on Facebook. Share it by texting or calling and say, man, God is so good. And see just how mighty God is and what he does in and through us as we operate as the church. Because Milestone Church is not closed. It might be empty in this building, but certainly we're not closed. And we're looking forward to seeing how God does some amazing things through each and every one of you this week and this month. Look forward to gathering again with you. Tonight we'll do a Milestone Minute at 8 o'clock tonight, and we'll share some things there, and we'll continue to keep you updated as to where we're at as a church ministry, and just be an encouragement to you there as well, and look for different ways to be able to connect with our community. We love you, church. Let me just pray with you as we close out our time together this morning. God, thank you so much for this opportunity to look at your word, to look at what you've done, and to see that Jesus is greater than our wallets. Jesus is greater than every wave that comes to us. And Lord, I pray that we trust you instead of living in fear. And I pray that, Lord, as a result, we would be a blessing to others. Guide us, I pray. And be with those that are really going through hard times right now. I know all of us are going through a significant amount of struggle, but Lord, for those that are really going through it, Lord, be an encouragement to them as only you can, and help us to reach out and be an encouragement as well. Not only to them, to also to each other and to those around us. God, we give you thanks and we give you praise for this technology that we have and for the opportunity to continue to be the church that you called us to be. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. We thank you, church. Thanks for joining online. Have a great day together. Be a blessing. Thanks.